So our next speaker in the competition is going to be Dr. Christopher Curry, and he's going to be talking about a changing or controlled environment. Please welcome Chris.
Thank you very much for being here. So first, I'm going to start out with a little bit about myself. I'm from Minnesota. I love it. I got my bachelor's in environmental horticulture and my master's in applied plant science from the University of Minnesota. From Minnesota, I went down south to Indiana, where I became a boilermaker, where I got my PhD in horticulture. Then from Indiana, I went westward to Iowa, where I assumed my position that I currently have as assistant professor of horticulture with an emphasis in greenhouse and controlled environments. You can also see I'm generally averse to elevation and warm temperatures with that geographic region. My current position breakdown is a three-way split, 60% teaching, 20% research, and 20% extension. And I remember that kind of first day on the job. I came in, tie, khakis, looking great, and then you sit down in this great big empty office and you think, what now? I got into the greenhouse area because I was a grower, really. So when I was getting my bachelor's degree, I graduated and I became a commercial greenhouse grower, growing orchids as well as working for the National Park Service, growing native plants for restoration. I really loved growing plants, and I loved it so much, and I was falling asleep with these academic books that I figured I needed other hobbies or I needed to go back to school and follow this passion. And I did. When I was going through, most of my degrees have focused on ornamental plant production, floriculture. And I think when you think of greenhouse, you typically think of floriculture. And there's a reason why. The North American greenhouse industry is heavily centered around floriculture. In fact, that's how we first had greenhouses in the United States. They were attached to them on the back of our florist shops. They would grow their own flowers. Well, now, fast forward, we have a greenhouse industry, floriculture industry, that's worth approximately $4 billion for the top 15 producing states. Floriculture is absolutely a major part of the greenhouse environment, or the greenhouse industry, but we're starting to see some changes. When you look at those same USDA statistics about floriculture, you see that over a 10-year period, it's remained relatively flat from about $4 to $4.1 billion. You know, it's just give or take $100 million. But that's a relatively flat value. Now, alternatively, on the other side of this screen, you see a picture of a greenhouse in the Netherlands growing lettuce. Now, at the same time that floriculture is worth around $4 billion and maybe flat, we've seen the increased popularity of growing edible crops in controlled environments. To give you some USDA statistics, in 2009 it was a little bit over $600 million. Fast forward to 2014, we were somewhere in the mid-$900 million. So, you can see that there's great amounts of growth happening in that food crop industry. But you still see that it's about a quarter of the value of floriculture. So you see one is increasing in popularity and one still has a lot of value. Now there is a third crop, or a third type of crop, that I don't have any economic stats to share, but I think we're also seeing the increasing popularity of plants for ecological applications, whether that's sustainable landscapes, restoration, those type of activities, pollinator habitat. So really, from looking where I came from, floriculture, the greenhouse industry is a lot broader than simply floriculture. So I had to think about what my role is. Again, my primary appointment isn't teaching. So my job is to try and help educate and train the future greenhouse growers, the future participants in the greenhouse industry, and reflecting on how the greenhouse industry is changing, where it's diversifying from floriculture, I wanted to try and reflect that in the teaching and in the courses that I teach at Iowa State. I teach four different courses. I'm teaching a new fifth course this fall called Orchid Mania. That's just going to be for fun. But my core course is in greenhouse operations and management, and this is what I call a crop agnostic course. This is the tools in your toolbox. Then I also have another course called floriculture crop production, and I like to summarize this as pretty things that go indoors, potted plants, cut flowers, and foliage plants. Now, I have another class that's called landscape plant production. Historically, this was called spring greenhouse crop production or bedding plant production. But I am going to be incorporating nursery production into that because that was going off the books, and I used to work in a research nursery, and I think that bedding plants and nursery go great together as outdoor landscape plants. This course is also a great place to integrate some of that information on native plant production. Okay, so that's why I changed the name from spring crops to landscape plant production. And then when I got to Iowa State, they said, we'd like you to develop a new course. And this is right when hydroponics was really starting to take off, so I started to develop, or I developed a course, HORT 331 Hydroponic Food Crop Production. So when I got to Iowa State, this is how I designed my the core of the greenhouse curricula. So we've got four semester-long greenhouse courses, which is something I'm very proud of. When I'm sure, as all you know, greenhouse and floriculture courses are being consolidated or dropped off the book. So having four semester-long greenhouse courses for a teacher is kind of like being a pig in mud. And I can say that since I'm from Iowa now. But really, when you back up and look at what this core represents, again, that greenhouse course is where we learn the fundamental topics. And then this is where I'm trying to empower students to feel comfortable growing plants for the aesthetic, for the ecological, or for edible applications. Again, trying to think broader than simply floriculture. But change is hard. We don't always want to change. And when the students, started learning they were going to have some native plant production, or they have to take the hydroponics class, or they have to take the floriculture class for the greenhouse emphasis, you start to hear some weird things. And you hear odd things as a professor. I think you all know that. But these are some of the things that I heard as students were reacting to these curricula changes. Flowers are pointless. Food crops are boring. And native plants are ugly. I'm a perennial optimist in some ways, and I like a big tent. I think there's room for all these crops. And so I wanted to try and share with students how they can enhance the perception or their understanding of how these different crops contribute to society. So I wanted to incorporate some service learning projects into my courses to try and enhance the students' experience as well as their technical skills with these different crops. So here we have a shot of our greenhouse that we use for hydroponic food crop production. This is the lab. The best professional advice that I've ever gotten has come through my love of the Grateful Dead. And one of the things I learned from the Grateful Dead is the value of wretched excess. And this is reflected in my lab. So we've got a number of different NFT systems, nutrient film techniques, some deep flow systems, and then vine crops in the back. And so we're producing somewhere in the neighborhood of 150 to 200 heads of lettuce per week, box of cucumbers per week, so on and so forth. So what do you do with all that food now you have the wretched excess? When I first got to Ames, I learned some things. Ames is a small town, but then you learn that even small towns that may be middle class to well off even have problems. And so what we decided to do is partner with a local food bank that's specialized in perishable food, and it's called Food at First. So what we do is I run this hydroponic lab like a working greenhouse. The students have to come in, check, maintain systems, they harvest and package the food, and then after each of our labs, we make a delivery to the Food at First. But I wanted to try and see if what I was doing was actually having an impact on the students and their education. So we have this weekly harvest and the food donation. I also asked the students to volunteer at Food at First because I wanted them to make the connection between what they're doing and their consumers in this case. And so they volunteered for either distributing food at the food bank or using the food that was donated in preparing meals or serving the meals and cleaning up afterwards. We also incorporated a few lectures on food security because I thought this would be an opportunity to talk about one of the challenges that we face societally. I'm not making the claim that hydroponics and controlled environments are going to solve food security, but I think that there can be a contribution of them. And then to try and figure out what sort of effectiveness and impact I had, we had self-assessments of the students' gain in knowledge, quizzes, as well as some written reflections. So after the course of the semester, when we look at the pre versus post, for the student self-assessment of did they learn about food security, like defining terms, describing the impacts of food security, you can see that, and this is pooled across two different years, we had significant increases in the student's perception of their understanding. So they felt as though they did learn. Sometimes they think they learn, but you don't actually know if they did. So this is why we took those quizzes and paired them with those self-assessments to see if we did have an increase. And when you look at the test scores across 2 years, the quiz scores across 2 years, at the beginning of the semester, we're 50 to 60%. And at the end of the semester, we're looking at a mid-C or a low-B. And again, you see that that was a significant increase. So they thought they learned, and this demonstrates that they did learn. You know, I'd like to maybe see a little higher grade, but it still shows that it does indeed improve. And what was really neat was reading the student reflections. Now, we went through and worked with the social scientists to code these and break down the percentages, but I just wanted to share some of the themes that they had throughout their reflections. They wrote a reflection at the beginning of the semester, the middle, and the end of the semester to see a longitudinal change in how they were perceiving their interaction in this lab activity. And it was great because they understood the community benefits of the Food at First program. They understood the benefits of their service. They talked about food waste and the role of food waste in society. They also talked about the quality of food available that was available to those in need. Many food banks tend to specialize in non-perishable items, but I think that as horticulturists, we all know the value in fresh fruits and vegetables. And also, I think the best thing was the ability to contribute to those in need. This past year, I was talking with a student who had taken this class the first year, and it turns out 3 years later, she's still volunteering at Food at First because of that experience, which was, again, I don't have any graphs, I don't have any stats, but I have a big thumping heart when I hear something like that. So I wanted to try and extrapolate this out into my other courses as well. So with that floriculture crop production course, we followed a similar trend. Now, I'm not going to share all the data with you. I'm just going to summarize. Again, we're growing. Students get about 60 square feet of growing area, which is actually pretty sizable to have in a greenhouse, and they grew 15 different floriculture crops. This is what I call growers gone wild. And again, wretched excess, what are we going to do with all these plants? I allowed the students, they worked in groups, and I asked them to please identify community partners that were in need or would benefit from some aesthetic beauty in their life. So we had Heartland Senior Services, Youth Shelter Service, and Emergency Residence Projects as what the students identified. What they did then is they put together a catalog of the crops that they were growing. They dropped it off at the community partner. They took orders from them, and then at the end of the semester, we fulfilled those orders, and we drive around the city with a bunch of floriculture plants, delivering them to our community partners. Again, and this is happening right around the holiday time with poinsettias and all that. And then finally, with the landscape plant production course, students, now again, the majority is going to be on ornamental annuals, perennials, and soon to be woody plants, but there is also a section on ecological plants. So we're working with Story County Conservation. Ames is in Story County. And the students are growing plants to do not quite restoration, but ecological landscaping and rain gardening. So the question, this all sounds good, or at least it does to me, but the question is, what does it do for their education and trying to teach about horticultural science? When the students across all three of these production courses, not the greenhouse course, but the three production courses, were asked about how they connected their skills to the service in the community, on a scale of 1 to 4, strongly disagree to strongly agree, you can see that the students were connecting their service and their technical skills. They also felt that, on a scale of 1 to 4, they thought that their service was enhancing their technical skills during the lab. Also, this is one of the underlying or secret themes. Students are fine with disappointing themselves. They're okay with that. But they don't want to disappoint others. And you can see that here, that they actually did increase their effort in class because there was a food bank that was going to be receiving that food, or there was a shelter that was going to be receiving those plants, or there was a landscape that was going to be rehabilitated. And so that was nice to see, and I was happy to see that they did increase their motivation. The other thing is, thinking about adding this as a component to a class when asked too little, too much, they really thought it was just about right. So I thought that they were saying that it fit well with the program. So using this service learning allows us to, again, try and reach that broader diversity that we have in the greenhouse crop environment or greenhouse industry, and is trying to teach these students the value in those so they can see the value in that crop diversity and the value in floriculture crops and edible plants as well as ecological plants. Okay, so I do have other components to my job, particularly 20% research. And so I'm not going to talk so much about my research themes. I do split my research primarily across ornamental plants, and hydroponic food crops, just because those are some of the two biggest areas of interest for research. But rather, I wanted to couch this in my mentorship because, again, with a 60% teaching appointment, I regularly incorporate undergraduates into my lab. Aside from hourly undergraduate employees, I've had 12 mentees in a science with practice program, and that's a semester-long course where they're working on an independent research project in collaboration with me. I've also had one mentee, Myra James, in the Lewis Stokes Alliance for Minority Participation, and it was great. She showed up from electrical engineering and just knocked on my door. And it ended up being a great collaborative project. And we don't just do the research, we also present it. These students have contributed to a number of ASHS oral presentations and poster presentations. In fact, this cover of Fort Technology in the shot next to it was some PGR work that I actually did with one of the undergraduates, so we're also seeing it through to publication. I also mentor graduate students, and again, this is just showing, this is from one of my graduate students' thesis where we're looking at some plant growth regulation interacting with biocontainers. I've graduated 4 master's students as sole advisor and 1 master's student as a co-major advisor. I also love to serve on committees. I tend to be that guy who stops a student in the middle of the hall and offers unsolicited advice on their research. I also tend to be the guy with the data loggers if they need to measure something. But I really enjoy graduate student mentorship. And you can see here, again, here on the top we have a Hort Technology cover that came from Nick Flack's thesis, as well as a Hort Technology cover that came from Kelly Walter's thesis. And both of these students actually received the Department of Horticultural Excellence in Research Award when they graduated. So I'm glad that their hard work was recognized. Now, I have another component, extension. I haven't always had an extension component. When I came to Iowa State, I had a 2-way split. But I am a grower gone wild, and I wanted to give back to my community, the greenhouse industry, because, again, this all connects. And so I badgered my department chair to add extension to my appointment, against the advice of nearly everybody. But, again, that's who I am, and that's what I do, and what good is my information if I'm not getting it back to the growers? One of the things I was most excited to do was start an Iowa State University greenhouse short course. I'm going to talk about some distance or web delivery of information, but I wanted to do an in-person, day-long meeting educational event. So now we've done this 4 years. 3 of the years I've been tracking some data, and for this event, I usually bring in 3 out-of-state speakers to complement. And you can see here on this bar graph, the blue bar is 2015, red bar 2016, and green bar 2017. We've got estimated savings as a result of the participants coming to the greenhouse short course. So what are they saying that as a result of the short course, they estimate they're going to save X dollars in the coming year from what they've learned. And you can see that over time, we're starting to shift into higher value savings. So I'm trying to bring higher value information to impact our growers. Also, when we look at the knowledge gains that we have, again, trying to demonstrate impact, you can see that the knowledge before on a 1-4 scale, around 2.3 to 2.6, knowledge after 3.2 to 3.3, we are getting positive knowledge gains, so they are learning. And these are across all the different presenters that we have at the short course. So again, I'm trying to bring valuable information to our growers. I also try to do distance or remote extension because that can be pretty efficient. And there's a great collaborative effort that I'm really lucky to be a part of, Electronic Grower Resources Online, or eGrow. There are a number of things that eGrow does. I participate in 4 of the different activities. First are the eGrow alerts and the eGrow edible alerts. The eGrow alerts tend to have information focused on ornamentals, and those edible alerts are for the hydroponics. These are distributed weekly from January through May to a list with over 4,000 subscribers, because what we're trying to do is send out information on the hot topics and the problems that we're seeing and how to fix it. We also have webinars. I participated in 5 of those. And as of last week, there's over 9,000 views from our YouTube channel. We've also done educational videos that are posted on our website as well as on YouTube. And we've had, just since this past February, over 2,000 views on those videos that I have created. I also really like to write, and I like to speak, giving extension presentations and publications. Right now, I actually have a column in Greenhouse Management Magazine called Production Pointers. I also have, it's not a column, but it's been in every issue for 3 years, hydroponic production primers. Again, I'm trying to give information for both ornamental and edible producers. I also publish in other trade magazines. When you take the combined circulation of those magazines I publish in, it's over 20,000 recipients of those magazines. Now, I've got two graphs here. The TROP graph, the black bars are my annual number of extension presentations, whereas the gray bar is the cumulative number. I bet if you look closely at the black bars, you can tell when I had twin daughters. That's the one on the bottom. The top one is extension publications, and the bottom is presentations. But I think this is a great way to reach growers. Again, you can't replace in-person meetings, so that's why I still like to give talks. I also strongly believe in service. ASHS is held up by those who serve. And so I try to serve in a number of different ways in our community. For the American Floral Endowment, I sit on the Vic and Margaret Ball Intern Scholarship Committee. We try and select greenhouse students to place them at 3, 4, 6 month internships at greenhouses around the country. I also am a consulting editor for Urban Horticulture Controlled Environments for Hortech. I'm a consulting editor for the Plant Growth Regulator section of Hort Science, and I'm a co-consulting editor with Mark Van Ursel for the photosynthesis and source-sink relationships in the Journal of ASHS. Within the American Society for Horticultural Science, I've also been serving, especially in those interest groups that are most closely aligned with greenhouse, like the Controlled Environment Working Group. I've served as the secretary, chair-elect, and chair currently. The Floriculture Working Group, secretary, chair-elect, and chair as well. As well as the Plant Growth Regulator. I'm currently the chair-elect for that. I just believe strongly in service just because someone has to help keep this community afloat and provide opportunities. I know I've received a lot of opportunities from ASHS, so it's time to give back. I think starting the graduate student oral competition in floriculture last year that I did when I was chair was one of the most exciting things I did because I was able to participate and benefit from those competitions, and so I wanted to try and give back and give graduate students more opportunities. So what I really try to do is have a program that integrates everything. My teaching informs my research. My research informs my extension. My extension informs my teaching. Everything tries to tie together. I get great ideas from growers. Students give me great ideas. Hopefully I'm training students that are going to go out and contribute to the industry. I really try and have, we have all these different areas, but there's really no boundary between them. It's all just for the general good of our community. This is the best slide in this presentation. These are really the reasons that I'm here talking to you. These are people including my undergraduate and graduate advisors, my undergraduate research assistants, and my graduate students, as well as colleagues from my department. I kind of am the harebrained idea guy, and these are the brains and the muscles behind the operation. They do everything that I was here able to show you, and I'm so grateful and so thankful for the impact they've had on my program. Now, there is one person who does not work in my lab nor has been a student that I would like to acknowledge, and that's my wife. Traditionally, you may not acknowledge a spouse in a scientific presentation, but I don't get all my work done in a 40-hour work week. I have early mornings and I have late nights, and I have two twin daughters, and my wife is extremely supportive, and she is the one who allows me to indulge in my career to try and do my best. So I would like to give a special shout out to her, even though she's not here and I'm going to get no points for this. So with that, do I have time for a question or two?
Great. Any questions for Dr. Curry?
Yeah, so there's a couple different ways. So one of the things is through undergraduate internships. I try and work with placing students into either operations within our state or out of the state. In fact, I've had two Vic and Margaret Ball scholars that I've got, as well as graduate students. A couple of my graduate students did part of their research in the greenhouse, in commercial greenhouses with growers. So I guess it depends on the undergraduate and in the graduates as far as the placement in those interactions. But all my graduate students interact with the growers on some level, including to doing some trials. Other questions? Thank you so much. I appreciate your time.